Golf Smarter number 139 for August 11, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The Art of Ball Striking and Shot Making with Scott Minnie.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. Here's a situation. If I were to give you one more hour of every day, what would you do with it? My guess is that you wouldn't be listening to podcasts. So the fact that you choose any portion of your day to listen to the Golf Smarter Tips, or Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcasts is truly appreciated. Thank you very much. Now, so much of the content on Golf Smarter is based on suggestions and requests that I receive via email. Scott Minnie was introduced to me by Will Lee of San Francisco, who says that Scott's book, Smash and Carve Golf, The Art of Ball Striking and Shot Making, is the most important golf book in his library. In 2003, Scott was named to the top 50 instructors in Canada by the National Post, and at last check, he's got 49 professional tournament victories. And we're happy that he agreed to join us on Golf Smarter. Welcome, Scott.
Hello, Fred. Yeah, well, I appreciate that listener of your show there that promoted me so greatly, and I've talked to him on the internet a little bit, and it was very kind of him to suggest me for your program.
Well, I had to see for myself. Thanks, Will, and but thanks again, Scott. We're talking to you in Canada, so we don't get a chance to talk to Canadian instructors very often. But I want to talk about the book Smash and Carve, and I want to start with the concept of Smash and Carve and what you mean by it.
Well, what I mean by it is smash and carve is their slang words for contact and direction. So I've been teaching golf for a long time, for about 20 years or so, and I find myself teaching a lot of taking divots and shaping the ball from right to left, which is the way most amateur golfers should learn, seeing as how so many golfers are slicers. So I just kind of put it together that it was contact and direction, divots, and shape the ball. And the other side of it was that so many golfers have the bad habits of scooping and slicing, which are kind of the opposite of smash and carve. So it just naturally fell into place, and that's how I laid out the book. So Smash and Carve chapters 2 and 3 are contact and direction, and I think those are the real exciting areas in the game and the areas that people need to learn and develop.
Let's start out with defining what you mean by scoop and slice, because I think once you get a good definition of that, I know for myself that I was able to all of a sudden go, oh, that's what I do. And then we'll move on to smash and carve, because I've never understood how you shape a shot, and I've always been curious. No one's ever really explained it to me before. So let's start with scoop and slice.
Well, I think in it, you have to get back to the straight theory, you know, and so many golfers are trying to hit their ball straight. And I find that a very damaging approach from about 3 or 4 levels, you know,
really?
The takeaway, the swing through, the hand action, going through the ball, that, you know, when you try to shape a ball right to left, it's considered good golf. So, I mean, I can't, if anybody shows up in front of me as a chronic hooker of the ball that's actually tried to hook the ball, it's like a beauty, you know, in disguise. So it's I think that, you know, if most people approach the game that way, it would be a no-lose for them. So, and scooping, you know, is just rampant. That's how everybody starts the game. So, you know, taking divots is the right way is the opposite of scooping. So, and that's why Hogan laid it out so well in his book with the left wrist supinating through impact, which is bowing instead of pronating, which the left back of the left hand is up at the sky through the ball. You know, good golfers are opposite to beginners, basically.
You have a lot of great pictures in the book, and unfortunately this isn't video, it is audio, so let's try to be as descriptive as possible in the sense of, you know, when you talk about pronating and these things, it's hard to imagine exactly what you mean by that. I want to get into the idea that hitting the ball straight is not a good thing.
No, that's right. It's not a good thing. It's a different... when a better player learns the game, like I'll just take you back to the way I started the game. Like my father told me, you got to draw the ball. Like he must have said it 100 times, you know, and I was 11 years old, and it's still the same to this day. So when you try to draw the ball, you learn how to roll your hands through the ball, and you learn how to hit out at the ball, which is called inside out. And those moves make the ball spin counterclockwise. When you try to hit the ball straight, like it's a task that you can't really have. So, and it also promotes bad habits through the ball, which generally lead to slicing. So the reason why people are slicers is because they try to hit the ball straight. You know, and that's what leaves the face open at impact instead of it rolling over. So, I mean, there are two different schools of thought. So most golfers should just simply be trying to hook the ball. And if they did, they'd be in a different class of a golfer. Like they'd basically be in the top 5%, where the other 95% are chronic slicers. So nobody can have straights unless you're an expert player.
Trying to hook the ball. So a hook, the difference between a hook and a draw is a matter of degree?
Yes. Yeah, a hook and draw are vague words.
Right.
A hook means big shape, and a draw means little shape.
Okay.
So I focus a lot of attention on people hooking the ball with big shape from right to left as a right-handed golfer, and then it's easy to get them to tone that hook down and potentially hit it straighter.
Oh, really?
So it's a process that goes from big shape to little shape to then possibly straight, but straight is a terrible word, you know, in my opinion. If people would just learn how to hook the ball, like if you put it into a few short words,
yeah,
and then learn how to work with that particular shape, they would see the benefits of power, because right to left shots go further than left to right shots substantially.
Why?
Well, for a variety of reasons. You know, when the hands roll over, that's called releasing the club head. You know, an inside-out path is stronger than an outside-in or what people deem a straight path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the hip action starts to work properly when the swing path is inside-out. You know, and the ball flies on a lower trajectory, and when the ball turns over in the air, it rolls more, it penetrates more. I mean, there's five or six reasons why it goes farther than a left-to-right shot, and people that are trying to hit it straight are left with a fade, so they don't know how to release the club.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you can learn how to release the club is if you practice hooking the ball.
Hmm.
It's the only way.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cut and dry.
Oh. Well, I'm glad it's so simple.
Well, it is simple in theory. I mean, it's only two or three moves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, it's the difference of swinging straight through or swinging to the right of your target for a right-handed golfer. But when you swing to the right of your target, your hands have to roll over, which makes the ball spin counterclockwise. Those are the only moves.
Right. And can there be a tendency to force that rollover?
Well, you have to in the early going, otherwise you'll never learn how to do it.
I see.
I mean, yeah, forced moves are key. I mean, that's why an instructor will use exaggeration to get important things across and get a student to learn how to do something, and then you can learn how to soften those moves later. But yeah, forced or exaggeration moves, yeah, you bet.
Hmm. What do you think are the more common mistakes that you see amateur golfers make, high handicappers, that you find to be, you can go right to the problem?
Well, scooping and slicing. And that's what I built my book around, Smash and Carve. I mean, scooping is rampant and slicing is rampant. Those are the two biggest bad habits in the game. So People don't.
Are they habits or are they results?
Well, I think they're habits from not knowing the proper way.
Uh-huh.
You know, so slicing is reversed by learning how to hook. Scooping is reversed by learning how to hit down the right way and have your left wrist go through the ball either bowing or flat. And it can't be cupped and pointing up at the sky when you go through the ball. I mean, Hogan had a great line when he used to go through the ball, and he said his left wrist used to, his knuckles used to point down at the ground when he hit the ball.
Hmm.
So, and a inexperienced golfer, a high handicapper, their left wrist, their knuckles point up to the sky going through the ball because they're trying to use phrases like, get under it. I'm trying to get under it today. When I hear that line, I just laugh my head off. You know, and a lot of people around me laugh at it too. As soon as you hear a golfer say, I'm trying to get under this one, well, they're defeated right from the start.
Really?
Because that's going to promote the bad the left hand cupping through the ball and scooping it up, and I'm trying to get under it today. Well, I mean, you're beat right from the start.
Right, because you want to hit down on it, right?
You got to learn how to hit the ball first and take your divots after the ball. That doesn't, whether you're chipping or whether you're pitching or whether you're hitting a full 8-iron or a wedge or a 3-iron, it's all the same. So that's why pros can perfect that move and better amateurs is because it's actually pretty basic.
Uh-huh. But the divot is not the same with every club.
Yes, it pretty much is.
Oh, really?
It's just that the divot... Well, yeah, the same down and through action takes place on all shots. They just call it different things. On a chip, they'll call it pinching the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on a half wedge, they'll call it nipping the ball. You know, on a full shot, they'll call it down and through. It's all really the same thing. There really is only one strike with an iron, or even a fairway wood for that matter, and divots are always welcome, as long as they're after the ball.
Right.
I mean, that's a major goal. Golfers should be promoting that for 2 to 5 years until they get it. But they don't promote it. They work on their swings without a cause. And that's what I was trying to do with the book, is say you got to work on your swing, you work on your ball striking, which is divots after the ball, and you work on your shot making, which is basically right to left.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes care of the bulk of golfers. 99% of all golfers need that type of effort.
Do you think that for so many golfers who go to driving ranges and they're hitting off of plastic, you know, mats versus hitting off of grass, that also decreases the opportunity and even the success of getting a good divot and hitting the ball properly?
Well,
and it promotes that scoop?
And hitting off mats, I mean, hitting off mats sucks. I mean, the equivalent would be having sex without a condom, you know, or with a condom. So it's, I mean, it's horrible. It's
with or without. Where are you going with that? With or without a condom?
Hitting off mats is like having sex with a condom.
Okay.
It's horrible.
Yeah, but... You
know, and it promotes bad habits as well. Maybe it promotes good habits, though. You never know.
Yeah, but we're not promoting not using a condom here. Let's where are we going? Use a condom,
well,
okay?
Well, you said be light.
Unless you're married and you're, yeah, dude, it's all taken care of. Well, I don't really want to talk about that here. You're embarrassing me here, Scott.
Okay, hitting off
mats. It's a different podcast.
It's horrible. And the reason why it's horrible, but... It seems to be what we're left with a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's a necessary evil, though.
Yes, because when you hit the ground first, the club bounces into the ball and makes the player look better than they really are.
Right, and they think they had a great shot.
Right, and then they go, God, I was hitting it great on the driving range, and then I went out in the course, and I was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's because the mats lulled them into a false sense of security. So what I try and do... You know, because I'm left with teaching off mats a lot, you know, up here in Vancouver. And, you know, what I like to do is put, when somebody's working on their ball strike, and I try and put a coin about 3 inches before their ball, you know, and their goal is to, they have to learn how to hit down at the ball without hitting that coin.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, and if they're really good, they'll go home with that coin. You know, and they can, and they'll even... be a little bit better if they put the loonie or the toonie in front of their ball too, because when they hit it fat and watch that sucker get flowing out into the field, they shape it up in a hurry.
That's an excellent tip. I've never heard that one, is to just take a coin, it doesn't matter what size, right, but just have it 3 inches before the ball.
Yeah. And yeah, and learn how to hit down without hitting that coin.
That's great. Ooh, yeah. Thank you.
Because like fat shots, so, you know, they're not hitting the ground first, which is fat, is not a desire.
Right.
You know, and it'll, you know, your ball will come up short all the time, and you'll never hit it with any energy or distance control.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Fascinating. You have a tremendous, I mean, it comes through in, not only in our conversation, but in the book, you're highly influenced by Ben Hogan.
Absolutely. He's, I learn every day from Ben Hogan. I've thumbed through his book for 20 years. I have the Hogan Secret article, which was the first main article he did after he did the book Power Golf in about 1948. But the Hogan Secret article came out in Life magazine in 1955. And it was a year and a half before he did the book in 1957. And but, you know, the Modern Fundamentals of Golf by Ben Hogan is there's so many great players in this world that follow that book to this day. I mean, in my opinion, Tiger Woods wouldn't be Tiger Woods without that book. Like, I'm convinced that Earl Woods read it to him as for a bedtime story. Quite honestly, I really am. They used to practice in their garage. And his father was a good player, and his father was a real Hogan guy. So it's Ernie Els, Vijay Singh, you name it. I mean, they all have a copy of that book, I guarantee it.
Well, isn't it amazing that Ben Hogan, who has an amazing story, did you ever read the book The Match? Have you seen that one yet?
No, I didn't. I heard excerpts from it. It was at Cypress Point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, check that book out. And if you want, you can go back to an episode earlier with Mark Frost, the author of the book. He was on our podcast, and it's a fabulous book. And if you're a fan of Hogan at all in that era, it gives great detail of their lives with Byron Nelson and the other players. And it's a wonderful book. But you're saying it's amazing to me how Hogan, who suffered tremendously and was in a tremendous amount of pain because of his accident. If you want to go ahead and give us a little history on that. Because I think it's relevant today because of Tiger. I think it's so interesting that we watch Tiger play in so much pain and gut it through and have a phenomenal performance. And we think it may be the greatest performance in golf or in any sport in history. But we didn't get to see Hogan perform like that.
Well, that's right. There was no television cameras around, but Hogan's accident in 1950, you know, left him close to, you know, not being able to walk again. And Tiger Woods, you know, mentioned that in his press conference. He said, well, you know, Ben, you know, could barely walk, you know, and he ended up playing in the LA Open almost close to a year after his accident. But you know, after his accident, he only was able to play in five or six tournaments a year, and he would win three or four himself. So,
amazing.
You know, his, you know, win-loss ratio in tournaments, you know, at that point was as good, if not better, than Tiger Woods. And something people don't know about Ben Hogan, which is probably one of the most fascinating things, is that he was undefeated in Ryder Cup play. And he was undefeated as a captain, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, he never lost a match in Ryder Cup play. Now, the European side was weaker then, but still, you know, it's quite amazing. So he never lost. Undefeated as a player, and he was undefeated as a captain.
Oh, wow. That's remarkable. And in Modern Fundamentals of Golf, Ben Hogan, it's necessary reading for everybody, huh?
If everybody owned that book and actually looked at it and practiced what was in there, most golfers would be pretty darn good, yeah.
And then would they still need Smash and Carve?
Well, I pride to smash and carve on a continuation or kind of things that Ben Hogan didn't talk about. You know, Ben Hogan in that book, you know, interesting, he never mentions ball flight once. But if you do the moves in his book to perfection, you would become a chronic hooker.
Hmm.
You know, that's what the moves are. But because he was such a chronic hooker throughout his career, you know, and he had to learn how to change that, and he's a self-taught player, that he hated the hook, but he still realized that most people needed to learn how to hook the ball and draw the ball. So I think that's why he left it out intentionally, because it would have been a contradiction on him saying things like, I hate hooking the ball, I have a terrible hook that you could hang your coat on, and, you know, stuff like that, because he would have been ridiculed. But he acknowledges such in the Hogan Secret article in 1955, August issue of Life magazine. So he said, for a golfer, you know, to be, you know, some like a classic fader of the ball, they have to first learn how to hook the ball. So there was ever no mention of straight there either. So, which gets us back to that stupid straight theory again.
Yeah, here we go again.
Yeah, well, that's a pet peeve of mine, people trying to hit the ball straight. There's no doubt,
right,
no doubt about
right.
that. I think that's the demise of most golfers. So.
Are you an advocate of, as far as lessons are concerned, are you an advocate of long-term lessons versus, say, intensive, like a golf school?
I don't think most people are ready for golf schools, really, because there's too much practice involved, you know, in them. So it's a crash course and their hands get pretty beat up. And, you know, I practice pretty hard and I have to tape my hands up, you know, when I practice for a 3-hour session. And most people just can't handle that. So I really like the half hour a week or an hour a week or a half hour even every 2 weeks, and for somebody to play and practice in between and just learn the game slowly but steadily, you know, so they're habits keep moving forward, they're good habits. And, you know, you can't really be in a hurry with the game, and that's why it's an advantage to take up the game when you're young. So.
Yeah, yeah, but then there's the rest of us. And then what about practice, you know, ratio of practice versus play? How much time should we be spending on our practice, you know, when time is such a premium in our lives?
Well, I think for a golfer to be, you know, decent or pretty good, you have to love practicing, or you have to actually like it. So I run into a lot of people and I ask them the questions all the time, how much do you practice and do you practice more than you play? And most people do say they play more than they practice. And that's really, if you're trying to learn a tough game, it's kind of a license to fail right there, but they want to get out and play. So
yeah.
I would have to say the ratio would have to be 50-50 anyway. And I'd lean on 80-20 on the practice side for sure, but I understand the way golfers are.
Sure, sure. So tell me where it is that you teach.
I teach at the University Golf Club in Vancouver, British Columbia. It's about 15 minutes from downtown Vancouver, where the Olympics are going to be in another 2 years, in 2010, less than 2 years now.
So that's going to be the Winter Olympics. They're not going to get to play golf, right?
The Winter Olympics, well, you can play golf year-round up here if we don't have snow on the ground. So the course is in pretty good shape all year round. So it's not the Great White North, as everybody likes to think it is up here.
We yeah, it's not Alaska.
It's similar to Seattle.
Yeah.
It's not Alaska. No, not Alaska, yes.
Vancouver's a great city. Love Vancouver. And how can people get in touch with you? Your website is... Tell us about the website and best way to get in touch with you if they want to have lessons and talk to you more about the book.
Yeah, the website is smashandcarvegolf.com. That's www.smashandcarvegolf.com. And they can send me an email off the website there if they like. And even if somebody wants to ask questions to me, I always respond, as long as it's not a long-winded question. So I really enjoy people just asking questions, especially if they have the book and or if I've taught them before or something. But anybody new is always welcome to send me an email. It's always welcome.
Great. Great. Well, again, the book is called Smash and Carve, and it's by Scott Minney. And if you are interested in looking at the book, it's not a big, thick book, but there is great illustrations in it. That's one of the things that I really enjoyed. I saw some things in here that I'd never really seen it presented that way. And I thought it was just so much better presentation.
Beach?
Yeah, what's with hitting on the sand here, hitting at the beach?
Well, that's our beautiful Locarno Beach in the west side of Vancouver. So Vancouver's a seaside community. We have water on beaches on the North Shore and on the Vancouver side. And right below the University Golf Club is Locarno Beach. And when the tide goes out, it goes out about a mile this time of year, you know, close. It goes out huge. And it's a great place to just walk around. And I shot those pictures, you know, in the fall and in the spring when not too many people were out there. And it's one of the best places to hit balls in practice there probably is in the world. So
why is that?
Just because it's really scenic and visual and good for your game, hitting off the sand. And
well, yeah, I mean, the scenic part I understand, but why is it you like the idea of hitting off the sand like this to help practice?
Well, it's, you know, I grew up, I didn't have a lot of money, and I needed to practice my game a lot, so I used to try to find places that I could practice and hit my shag balls for free. So, you know, the parks were used sometimes and other practice fairways that I can find, but I found the sand and I learned the low tide and how to go out there and practice. And you'll hear a lot of stories of great players that have learned their game on the sand, like Gary Player is one and Seve Ballesteros is another, and all keen golfers have hit balls on the beach. That's just something that you do. It's like a goal in life. So for me, it was a natural to do a book that was on the sand because I was there for so many hours hitting balls in this beautiful setting that nobody was there. So a big open space. It was kind of like Scotland, but it was here.
Great. Scott Minney, thanks so much. I appreciate your time. Book again is Smash and Carve Golf.
Thank you very much, Fred.
And speaking of books, remember, we're giving away 4 autographed copies of Instinct Putting by Eric Alpenfels. And not only did Eric, he's got 2 other people that he worked with on the book. All 3 people signed each of the books. So deadline for entries is Friday, August 22nd, 2008. Make sure you go to golfsmarter.com, click on the word contest, and select Instinct Putting. Make sure you download the episode 26 of Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf that was published on August 8th, 2008. Kenny and I had a great time with Bob Vokey, the man behind the Vokey Wedges, the number one wedge in golf. Also, Golf Smarter Tips, a completely separate podcast, is now published 5 times each week, featuring instruction, and instruction. Now, we close today's show with a contribution from Ken Kishihara of Fresno, California. Ken suggests that this is a prayer more than a quote, but even as much as this game is a religion to some golfers, I try to keep my heavenly thoughts away from the course. But I enjoyed this quote anyway because it did describe my weekend round. And it's something like this. Dear God, so far today I've done all right. I haven't cursed, haven't lost my temper, thrown or broke any clubs, cheated, purposely wrote the incorrect score, or coveted other players' equipment or abilities. I'm really glad about that. But in a few minutes, I'm going to get out of bed, and from then on, I'm probably going to need a little more help. Next week, the return of Balance Point Golf and Negative Swing Thoughts with Jim Waldron. If you have any quotes, comments, suggestions, or questions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
The Good Dog Podcast is for people who are passionate about dogs.
I love my dogs.
I interview veterinarians, dog behaviorists, and a whole range of experts who offer tips and insights.
A good German Shepherd makes decisions. It will say, well, you know, I know the light just changed, but on the other hand, there's a very quiet Prius coming your way, and so I'm going to stop, whereas labs have a tendency to just follow rules.
You'll hear about some amazing canines who help their owners to be safe, and in some cases, alive.
So
sometimes diabetics will test and they'll still be at 100 saying, I'm not going low. What are you talking about? And the dogs let them know before they even feel it.
And you'll pick up ideas for solving a host of challenges.
Within a week, you're going to have a dog that is calm. He lies down quietly. He's just going to be a totally different dog.
I'm Joanne Green. Please subscribe to the Good Dog Podcast, found in iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.